Are we being gaslighted, or is that even really a question? We'll talk about this next on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. And I asked that important question, or at least I think it's important. Hopefully you will too. I asked that important question at the beginning because essentially I want to talk about some things that came to mind as I was reading a couple of news stories. These stories have to do with things having to do with health, and we get gaslit a lot, gaslighted, not gaslit. Let's talk about the difference between gaslit. Seems like it would be the more correct. Are we being gaslit? Well, gaslit has a specific meaning. It means that we're using gas lights. Gaslighting is a term that comes from a movie. Now, okay, it may sound strange that a term of what amounts to psychology or behavioral issues comes from a movie. Now, I've seen this movie, and it is something of a thriller. It's a psychological thriller. It's called Gaslight. If you're not an old movie buff or you've never really heard of it, it's Charles Boyer, Ingrid Bergman, and Joseph Cotten in the Hollywood version. I guess there's a British version of this thing. I've never seen that. I've seen the Hollywood version. And what it has to do with is a woman who, not to get into the whole plot line, blah, blah, blah. Charles Boyer is married to Ingrid Bergman, and he's trying to make her think that she's insane or of unstable mind. And Joseph Cotten is trying to get a handle on what's happening, why it's happening, and how he's doing this thing. Part of the term has to do with, it's interesting in the movie, I'm not sure in the book, there's a book called Gaslight that this movie Gaslight, single word Gaslight, is made from. And essentially what's one of the main things that we see is this is happening in the pre-electricity era, and Charles Boyer is controlling the lighting, the gas wick, in such a way that he dims the lights, these gas lights, and she mentions that the lights have dimmed, and he says, "Oh, no, 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 my dear. There have been no dimming of the lights. Everything's just fine." So he keeps doing this in kind of random fashion, and then other things start to happen. And little by little by little, she begins to question her sanity. Does this go on in public media now? Well, the answer is, of course it does. Look, half the things on television, especially regarding advertising, is an attempt to gaslight you, especially when it has to do with things like over-the-counter drugs or even prescription medicines. All you have to do is listen at the end of these interminable advertisements for drugs. Used to be in the old days that drug companies practiced what was called ethical marketing. In other words, you did not go directly to the public to advertise your pharmaceutical. And I know this for a fact because my family, I come from a family of pharmacists, and my grandfather was a pharmacist and a representative for a small Midwestern pharmaceutical company, and my uncle Ken was also a representative for the same pharmaceutical company, and you did not see ads for their products on television or in, like, for instance, magazines. They advertised only in professional journals, and the only promotionals they did were in doctor's offices. So instead of this thing where ask your doctor if blah, blah, blah is right for you, I'll be quite honest, half the time the doctor doesn't know, if maybe more than half. What the doctor knows is what the drug representative tells them. And now, also, it's what the advertising tells them. Some of these drugs, I can remember seeing advertisements for drugs on television. This is in the 90s on for pain relief stuff that was later taken off the market because it did severe liver damage or other kinds of nerve damage. So do we get gaslit all the time by advertising? Oh, sure. Look, every time you're told that all your neighbors are doing this, and you should be doing it too, and if you're not, there's something wrong with you, you're being gaslighted. You know, it's a common technique. One of the first things I can remember when I first started studying logical fallacy, one of the things you really paid attention to was advertising. And it especially happened, look, this is a presidential election year. Are we being gaslighted regarding what's happening in politics? Of course we are. I've been watching a series of Sherrod Brown commercials. I don't like to talk about specific candidates, but Sherrod Brown has been running a series of advertisements showing prominent, really prominent Democratic sheriffs and that kind of thing, talking about this law that he sponsored during the Trump administration having to do with punishing fentanyl traffickers, and how he worked together with Trump to get this law passed, and Trump signed it, and it's part of the law, and Trump and Sherrod Brown's done all these things to stop fentanyl trafficking. Well, one thing they forgot to tell you is that while he may have sponsored this bill and Trump did sign it, it made it sound like he worked specifically with Trump on this. Hey, give me a break. Sherrod Brown did not work with Trump on this. Trump saw the bill, liked it, and signed it. But what they're really forgetting is that one of the biggest places where fentanyl comes into the United States is over the open southern border. And Sherrod Brown has been a champion of the open southern border. He has been all about not doing anything to stop the flow of illegal immigration into the United States. So you can pass all the laws to punish fentanyl traffickers that you want to, but if you don't shut off the source, then your law is meaningless. And now we're in a situation where it's, again, not mentioned, where in cities that are run by liberals, not just Democrats, mostly Democrats, prosecutors are simply refusing to prosecute certain kinds of cases. Car theft, drug trafficking, shoplifting, cases of assault. If the person involved is a minority, a suppressed minority, then prosecutors simply won't take the cases. Is this a problem? Well, obviously. But that's another form of gaslighting. Recall why people are not being prosecuted because they're oppressed. They should be allowed to shoplift and rob stores blind because they've been oppressed. Ladies and gentlemen, this is an absurdity. And if you're sitting there and shaking your head, you should be shaking your head because you're being gaslighted. You're being told that you're the one that's incorrect. You're the one who doesn't see the world correctly. You're the one who, you just don't understand the circumstances. And if you would just pay attention and just get in line and walk in lockstep with the political elites who are doing these things, then you would suddenly come to your right mind and understand. That is a perfect example of gaslighting. Right now, this is being recorded on Thursday, the 30th of May, 2024, for our show on Saturday, the 1st of June, 2024. And as I sit here recording, I get a pop-up on my news flash that Donald Trump has been convicted of all 34 counts in New York. The charges of the non-crime that he committed. And, of course, with the instructions that the judge gave, there was no other thing that they could do. They didn't have to come to a unanimous decision. They didn't have to agree that one of the some of the crimes that supposedly came first that led to the others, he didn't have to be guilty of the first crimes, but he could be guilty of the second crimes. Well, if a crime leads to a crime, how can you be guilty of a crime if you weren't guilty of the original thing? Ladies and gentlemen, this is a perfect example. This was one of the most gaslighted trials I've ever heard of. The one in Atlanta, very similar. That one seems to be falling apart rather badly. This is the old, if you remember the Wizard of Oz, when they finally get into the wizard's chambers and the great and powerful Oz is up there and the lightning's cracking and the lights are flashing and his face is, his face is appearing in this smoke and suddenly Toto goes over and pulls away the curtain. There's a guy, a little short guy, who's operating all this equipment and pushing buttons to make the thunder crackle and make the lights flash. And what does he say? Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. And they finally confront him and he's still yelling in the microphone and they said, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm the great and powerful," into the microphone. And then he walks away from it and he says, "Oz." So it's this little guy. He was gaslighting them. All this whole thing was a facade. And you may not know this. Many, 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 many people don't know this. But the book, The Wizard of Oz, is a political satire. It's not a kid's story. It's a deeply satirical look at the politics of the turn of the century, right around the turn of the century, maybe a little before. And the whole yellow brick road thing has to do with the gold standard. This was a political dig at the free silver movement. I have no time to go into all that. But the fact is, the Wizard of Oz and the whole thing, the Wicked Witch and all that stuff had to do with... if you remember, that Dorothy was a farm girl, this was about farmers and farmers demanding free silver. And that doesn't mean they were demanding that they be given free silver. They were demanding that silver be allowed to float, the value of silver be allowed to float, and the value of gold be allowed to float economically. Under the original system of the gold standard, which we haven't been on for quite some time, maybe all going on 50 years, under that original standard, there was a par value of gold. And that was, gold was $20. It was, I think there were some cents involved, but basically $20 for a troy ounce, okay? The pound sterling was not a gold-based currency. It was a silver-based currency, but it had a par value upside the dollar. Beside the dollar, the pound was $5 for 1 pound. And the pound got its name because it required a pound of sterling silver. That was in coinage. It required a pound of silver coins to be the equivalent of the pound note. And the American dollar is $20 for 1 pound or for an ounce of gold. Okay. During the late, there were pressures, economic pressures having to do with railroads and farmers and all kinds of things, where essentially there was essentially a shortage of gold. The economy had gotten to the point where things were beginning to burst at the seams. The economy was taking off, and people were demanding that silver, the value of silver, be allowed to float to cover. You'll notice that our coinage is no longer silver. Why? Because we couldn't afford to make coins out of silver or precious metals, other precious metals. Pennies used to be copper. Copper's too valuable. Why is copper valuable? Why is silver too valuable? Why is gold so valuable? Why is gold, as of today, the spot gold price today is $2,342.60 an ounce. Now, that's about little over 100 times. Actually, I think about 100 and, well, in any case, it's over 100 times the par value of gold. What does that mean? That means that the dollar is worth 1/100th or thereabouts of what it was when the gold standard, when the par value of the gold standard was $20 an ounce. Now, it's interesting that in the 1930s during the Depression, a lot of people don't know this, it was made illegal for people to own gold, and the par value of gold was changed from $20 to $33, I believe. So in other words, the currency was devalued by about 54%, 53% in one fell swoop. You had to take the paper or the silver currency. And that's why basically you have silver certificates. When we were kids, we used to see silver certificates that was redeemable in silver at any bank. Okay. So does gold still have power over the economy? Well, of course it does. It has wields great authority over the economy. But the fact is that when people say, well, inflation is natural, inflation just happens. No, it doesn't. It happens when the government has control over the backing supply and prints money. We talk about the government printing money. The government doesn't so much print money. How much money do you carry around? You don't carry around that much money. You might be making 50, 60, $75,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year. Do you get it in cash? No. What do you get? You get a direct deposit into your checking account or savings account or some kind of an account. Almost nobody gets a check anymore. I still get a check because I'm cheap and I won't pay the fee to have the direct deposit done. Plus, I'm forgetful, and sometimes I forget to do it on Wednesday, so my paycheck's there on Friday. You know how that goes. Nonetheless, since I'm just working with myself, that's not a big deal. I can go a little bit and not have my paycheck, and I've done that a lot. But the fact is that we're gaslit into saying we make this much money. If you make $50,000 a year, how much do you actually get? Let's just make it easy. Let's make it $60,000 a year. How much is that a month? That's $5,000 a month. If you're bringing in $5,000 a month, that's, we're going to, again, talking rough figures, about $1,250 a week. Do you actually get $1,250 a week in your checking account by your direct deposit? Of course you don't. Why? You've got federal withholding. You've got Social Security withholding. You've got Medicare withholding. You've got state withholding. In many cases, not all, but in many cases, you'll have a local income tax. And in many cases, not all, you'll have a school income tax. So your $1,250 a week looks more like maybe 800, maybe 750. Maybe. Okay. Again, you're being gaslit. If you don't have access to that $60,000 a year, you didn't really make $60,000 a year. You were gaslit into saying, hey, I make 60K. No, you don't. The government takes it immediately. And guess how that came about? Withholding is only as old as World War II. We started withholding during World War II at the federal level. Why? Because they needed money to make the war effort go. Therefore, they had you withhold rather than waiting and filing either quarterly or yearly and paying all your income taxes at once. Because that was the deal. That's why April 15th is your filing date. That is simply your final reconciliation. That's when you find out, when people say, the government gave me some money back. No, they didn't. They used your money interest-free for that part of the year that they had it. Anywhere from 365 days up to one day. They got to use your money interest-free. Now, you try not paying them on April 15th, and what happens? Interest and penalties. Do they have to pay you interest and penalties? Of course not. Why? You're a lowly taxpayer. It really doesn't matter all that much. That's gaslighting. Okay? So, we go back and take a look at what was happening, and I got into this explanation to explain the idea behind the Wizard of Oz, believe it or not. So the next time you watch the Wizard of Oz, keep it in mind, and you can find these books. They're based on a book by L. Frank Baum, B-A-U-M, L. Frank Baum. L. Frank Baum was a free silver guy. He was a writer, a political commentator. But he did write them in this simplistic fashion. Why? Well, because he was gaslighting a little bit too, but he was propagandizing the other way. So we get hit with propaganda all the time. One of the reasons that Hollywood is not doing well is because people are tired of paying. You know, if my wife and I go out to the movies and we get the senior discount even, if we go out to the movies, it's $30 or more. And we get in there, and after you've gotten pop and popcorn and, you know, Raisinets, if just to call up another movie, one of my favorites, Blazing Saddles, what was the big deal in there? Raisinets. Everybody got Raisinets. By the time you pay all that, and don't blame the theater owner, because he has to rent those movies. He pays a rental on those movies. They keep track of, if you're in a multiplex, they keep track of what movie you went to, because that's how they pay the rent. It's per viewing. That's why they broom you out of a theater now. When I was a kid, you go to the movies. If you went in the afternoon and paid your ticket, you could sit through two or three or four shows if you had the stomach for it. Gosh, I remember my mom needed a babysitter. She dropped us off at the movies once. I saw Mary Poppins four times in a row. Let me tell you, man, even as a kid, I was done with Mary Poppins. We won't go there, but that happened to me. Okay, that's why you can't do that anymore. It used to be the rent was fairly reasonable on a movie. And my wife had a boyfriend at one time whose father managed the local set of drive-ins. And when they ran Disney movies, they ran them rarely. Why? Because the rent was so high. Disney movies had high rents. Other movies that, you know, the reason that a lot of B and C and D films got shown in drive-ins was because the rent was cheap. And if you're charging this is in the 70s, obviously, if you're charging $2 or $2.50 a person to get into a drive-in movie, you know, you don't even if you fill the theater, the field, if you will, to watch the drive-in movie, you had to make sure you had enough money to pay the rent on the movie. So they didn't show always top-notch entertainment. They showed junk films and, you know, stuff we won't go into. But movie theaters make their money. In a lot of cases, they break even on the film rental, but they make money on popcorn, on candy, on drinks, all the snacks and all those things. That's where they make their money. And don't let them tell you otherwise, because, I mean, they may say, yeah, we make some money on movies. Yeah, some of them may, if they fill it up. I've been in movie theaters where I was one of seven people sitting in these luxury seats watching a movie. Well, how long do you think that movie stays around? Not very long. Okay, economic reality. Now, the real economic reality is one of the reasons I was in movie theaters with seven people in the seats was because the movie was nothing more or less than propaganda. Action pictures, doesn't matter. Action pictures, dramas, comedies, there's always a message embedded in it. And people were like, I'm not going to give you this much. I'm not going to spend $50 to get propagandized. Because people recognize, in this case at least, that they are being gaslighted. You know, Hollywood is busy committing suicide by showing, continually making films in which messages that people don't want. We want entertainment. We don't want a message. And we don't want to be gaslighted. We get gaslighted all the time. We get gaslighted in politics. We get gaslighted in entertainment. We get gaslighted on the news. Constantly. Listen, one of the reasons that CNN is essentially a failed news network is because they gaslighted so badly, not just during any Republican administration, because that's a fact. They gaslighted so badly during the Trump era, and some of them even admit it. Now, that doesn't mean you don't get gaslighted on Fox News, because you do. What's interesting about Fox News is Fox News has a kind of a left-center news bias, but their opinion side, their commentary side, tends to be very conservative. Now, they've broomed out people like, they broomed out Tucker Carlson. Why? They broomed out Megyn Kelly. Why? Megyn Kelly's an interesting case. She's more of a journalist. You know, is she always right? No. But, you know, she at least attempts to get at the bottom line story, and she's capable of understanding when things are not going right, when we're being told a fib. So that's why Hollywood is failing. And another reason they're failing is, why would you go to the theater when you can sit at home? There are movies, I will agree, need to be seen on the big screen. But why would you go to the theater when you can pay a fraction of what you'd pay in the theater and watch it at home? Now, a lot of us have big enough screens, so, you know, we can get away with that. That's why the entertainment, you know, a lot of places have, the biggest TV I have, I think, is a 46. 46 or 48, and it needs to be that big because it's in a big room and you can't see it otherwise. But a lot of homes are now buying 75s, 80s, that kind of thing, and setting up a giant entertainment rooms in their basement where they watch movies and play video games. Why? Because, hey, if I'm going to be gaslit, I want to pay a reduced price. And I want to have control over the clicker so I can click through the parts I don't want to see. And I'm not going to pay giant amounts of money for the privilege. Now, who does this leave out in the cold? It's really the theater owner. I feel sorry for theater owners. They really don't have any say over the end product that they're getting. But nonetheless, when you go in there and you're paying $14 for popcorn and $8 for a drink, just remember, they're just trying to survive, and they're a source of jobs for young people who are in entry-level, you know, entry-level jobs, and people that sweep up and people that run the projector and all those kinds of things. So, but that being said, let's go back to the gaslighting period. Some of you may not be aware that in Florida, there's been a grand jury that's been put together to Ron DeSantis ask the Florida Supreme Court to determine whether pharmaceutical manufacturers and their executive officers and other medical associations or organizations participated in criminal activity or wrongdoing concerning their involvement in the development, approval, or marketing of COVID-19 vaccines. Well, the jury released a first report. Now, remember, this was in 22. We're now in 24. They released their first interim report in February of 24. Members confirmed the accuracy of many claims health experts and media apparatchiks dismissed as misinformation. In other words, we were being gaslighted throughout the whole pandemic. Many of you already have come to that realization. You understand it. We were lied to. I can tell you that as an elder in a church in Pataskala, by the way, Providence Presbyterian OPC Church, we meet Sundays at our services at 11. Come join us. Come visit us and tell me who you are. Shake my hand or hurl insults. Either way, we're on 7095 Summit Road in Pataskala. We're on the west end of Pataskala, just south of Summit Station. And this report was submitted to the Supreme Court on May 21st, which is just a few days ago, really. The second interim report details various topics not covered in the first, such as the prevalence of natural immunity among those infected with COVID and medications used to treat infected patients. Now, I brought all that stuff up about my being an elder in this church. Listen, we got listened to all the reports in the spring of 20. In the spring of 20. What did we do? As elders, we evaluated what we knew. What we knew at the time. And we chose to do something different for church than we normally. We closed the doors of the church and we built a system whereby we could broadcast church to our parishioners, to our congregants. We built a remote broadcasting system. It took us a while. It evolved. And we still maintain that system for those who are shut-ins or can't make it in or on vacation and still want to participate as closely as possible to into the service. Okay, so what happened? We get 5 weeks into this thing, and I start paying, you know, we're all paying attention to the news, and we all know what we've been told, that this was a, you know, this was essentially Ebola. We were all going to die. Huge numbers of us were all going to drop dead from the, when I say huge numbers, I mean 25, 30% of the population was going to get this. A huge number of them we're all going to get it, and 30% of us were going to die, if not more, blah, blah, blah. We all know that that's what happened. And as soon as the elders began to look into this, and I have special knowledge because I have a degree in biochemistry and I have the ability to read some of the scientific stuff, and which I did. And I just basically, the elders just basically at 5 weeks said, you know what? We've been gaslighted. Is it bad? Of course it is. There are people in our congregation that are going to get it, and somebody's probably not going to die. But it's not going to be because they wouldn't wear a mask. It's because they had underlying physical problems. And that's what this, the COVID-19 virus, killed people with underlying physical problems. There was no one who got it. In fact, we all know that children were not susceptible at all. They didn't get it at all. The only children who got it, and those who got it and died, were children who had underlying serious medical conditions. Cancer survivors, serious infections already in place, those kinds of things. So we were gaslighted into closing our church. Now there are churches, and I will give them kudos, and I will praise them for not closing at all. We did open our doors for people who requested. They said, we don't like this online worship. And I go, well, we don't really like it either. But they wanted to come, and they were willing to take the risk. And we said, I'm willing to take the risk if you are. And we all the elders said that. So the elders said, yes, you can come. And those who requested to come, we opened the doors to them. And after about 5 weeks, we said, okay, it's time to open the doors back up. Now, what did some people do? Did everyone come then? No, some people continued to stay away. And we were asked to make it mandatory to wear a mask. And those of us who understood that the mechanics of how viruses transmit said, this is ridiculous. This is absolutely absurd. Masks stop nothing. You've heard the analogy, perhaps, that it's like trying to stop a mosquito with a chain link fence. That's approximately correct. The dimensions are about right. You cannot stop a virus or a group of viruses even with a mask. I don't care if it's an N95. I don't care if it's a cloth. I don't care if it was paper. I still remember an actress who is not noted for her brainiac ways, Alyssa Milano, showing people how to crochet a mask. And she had it on. And when she got criticized for that, she said, well, you know, it's a joke. Or it's to wear over a regular mask. Oh, come on. No, it's not. When the worst of the pandemic had passed, and yet we were being told that the virus is mutating. Well, of course it's mutating. Viruses always mutate. And it's actually getting worse. It was not getting worse. It was becoming weaker and weaker. But we were then told that we needed a double and triple mask. By all means, let's put up 3 chain link fences for the mosquitoes to try to get through. It's double absurd. Basically, it created serious health trouble, and we all knew this. Those of us who were paying attention and were not taken in by the gaslighting knew this. And then we were treated like pariahs and called names and told we were killing people, and that I believe we were told that called names by people like Whoopi Goldberg who called us complete idiots and that kind of thing. No, ma'am, you may look in the mirror for that. We're fine. You're not. One thing we knew, and now I got COVID. My wife got it early, very early, and never got sick again. I think maybe she got it a second time, but she got one of the variants much later when it already had mutated to next to nothing. I had it 3 times. I had the original virus. I would not take the vaccination. We would not. Our church did not demand vaccinations because, first of all, this vaccination was not a vaccination. It was genetic therapy, and If you still say that, people go nuts. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what a vaccine is. Oh, I'm fully aware of what a vaccine is. I have a degree in biochemistry. A vaccine is live or killed virus. Live or killed virus is what a vaccine consists of. Live virus is a what they call an attenuated virus. It's been run through a an organism, which then the DNA in it or the RNA is mutated. And then once it's mutated, you get the immunity without the illness, usually. Not always. Sometimes you get other things. ladies and gentlemen, I'm old enough that I can remember the swine flu, the supposed outbreak of the swine flu that we were all preparing for, and we were all supposed to be at an absolute fear of. And what was the swine flu? Well, it originated, obviously, in pigs. And it was jumping over in pig farmers. Sometimes it would jump species and come into these pig farmers, and they were getting sick and that kind of thing. But this was going to be one. This was in 1976 or 7. I don't remember exactly when. 1976 or 1977. I think in 76. They came up with the swine flu vaccine and demanded that I was interested in a girl who was a nursing student, and they made them all take this swine flu vaccine because they were in contact with patients and that kind of thing. And this thing turned out to be a health nightmare. Huge numbers of people who took the swine flu vaccine ended up with a syndrome that essentially includes paralysis, usually temporary, but not always, sometimes permanent nerve damage, called Guillain-Barré syndrome. That was not the only problem that popped up. That was the major problem that popped up with I believe it was a live virus for swine flu. And the girl I was interested in took that shot and was sick for weeks. Weeks, fevers, headache, nausea, which means she had a severe immune reaction to that shot, which is always a risk when you're doing that kind of, when you are stimulating the immune system. Some people are overstimulated. She was kind of small. She weighed about 95, maybe 100 pounds, 100 pounds. And she just did not handle it well. But that's not the only time that's ever happened. We've gone through periods where mass inoculations, and there's always mass reactions. And some of them aren't so bad, and some of them are not good. I've had not good, every year I go in, they ask me, will you take the flu shot? Because I'm diabetic, and I was a little overweight. I'm not so much now, but I'm diabetic and I have high blood pressure, and you're susceptible. You need to take the flu shot. And I go, no, thank you. No, thank you. I choose not to do that. And then I'll get this barrage of propagandistic, in other words, gaslighting stuff about, and I said, I know I have a higher probability because of my conditions, but I also take other precautions. I am in better shape. I take supplements. I exercise. I do those things. I'm not exercising as much as I should, but I do other things that other people my age don't do. I'm not on tons of pharmaceuticals. I'm on some. I have thyroid issues, and so I'm on thyroid and blood pressure and my blood sugar. So, but that's it. And they'll come up, would you like to try this drug? No, thank you. I'll pass. I'd rather not. Why? Because I'm well versed in what some of these do. Listen. You know you're being gaslighted when you watch the end of these commercials on TV. And what are they, basically, what are they? If this drug doesn't kill you, it could cripple you, or it could give you cancer, or it could give you I've seen some that say, yes, you could get Guillain-Barré from this. But we now know there are a huge number of excess deaths since the pandemic. The life expectancy has begun to drop in America. And it's not because we're all obese. It's because so many people took that shot and are having dropping dead. How many athletes have you heard about that are just dropping dead of heart issues, of organ failure, of all these horrible things? And they're beginning to be able to trace it back to the shot. But I'm telling you right now, the pharmaceutical companies are dumping millions of dollars into research to say, no, it can't be that. Why? Even though the Congress, when they got their emergency use authorization, indemnified Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson. By the way, Johnson & Johnson was not an mRNA, was not genetic therapy. It was an actual vaccine, if I recall right. And Johnson & Johnson users aren't having the same problems. They may have had Guillain-Barré. They may have had some other things, but they are not having these blood clots, organ failures, all these weird things that are happening even months after. Why is this happening? We were told, we were lied to, and anybody who'd had any training in genetic biology, what they call molecular biology, knew that there are repair mechanisms in the human body. If RNA that it doesn't recognize, and that's what this mRNA from the virus was, this messenger RNA, RNA it doesn't recognize, it has a repair mechanism. It can either treat that as a build an antibody for it, or it can do both, actually. It can recognize that, hey, that's a genetic sequence. There's a problem here. It's escaped. Let's put it back into a cell and inculcate it into the genome, which is happening with some people. So that mRNA was supposedly going to be destroyed right after it entered the skin. When I heard that little piece of propaganda, I immediately knew that that was a lie. It wasn't going to be immediately destroyed. It wasn't the antibodies. It was going to go into the bloodstream, and bad things were probably liable to happen. Now, why doesn't it happen to everybody? Because some of us have different immune systems than others. Some of us have different DNA repair mechanisms. I mean, we all have the same basic ones, but some of ours work more efficiently than others. Some people took the shot, had no trouble whatsoever, but still got COVID. That's the real dumb thing. So many people took the shot and got COVID anyway. I chose to go with natural immunity. What does that mean? I chose to wait until I got it and gut it out. And I did get it, and I got it good. I was down for about 11 days. High fever. And men in their 60s do not normally carry 104 fever, but I did. I had the brain rot and the whole shtick, you know, where your oxygen gets a little low, and people would ask me technical questions, and I'm like, man, don't even talk to me about that. I have no idea right now. I can't answer that question. I was on a committee to evaluate some quotes for heating and cooling equipment in our church, and they sent me this. Have you had a chance to look at it? I said, I'll be quite honest, it all looks like differential equations. I can't make hide nor hair of it. I have no idea what was going on. Okay. Now, our church basically recognized this, and we opened up. We refused to require masks, although we made it a voluntary thing. And when we were asked, we got together and decided, when we serve communion, we put on gloves and we put on masks. And two of us absolutely refused to wear it after that. You know, we would do it in certain circumstances, but we had a third elder who chose to wear his mask all the time. We had many discussions about Romans 13 and the requirement, you know, the state says we need to do this. And I said, the state needed, said we needed to shut the doors, and we chose not to do that. The state overstepped its bounds. And again, that's a whole big thing with being gaslighted. Masks did nothing. Subsequent studies have shown that masks did nothing. Places that did not require masks had lower rates of infection. Sweden, for instance. Some people voluntarily masked, but most people didn't. And guess what? The transmission rate was about the same, and the people got natural immunity real quick there. Why? You don't even necessarily have to get the disease to get natural immunity. You just have to be exposed enough to it to produce the antibodies. This is, and I can't blame people who got gaslighted, because we were being told lies by people like Anthony Fauci, the National Institutes of Health, the Centers for Disease Control. My doctor unloaded a bunch of stuff on me, and I said, you know that that's completely false. Well, that's what they're telling us, though, so I have to go with that. And I'm like, but it's false, and you know it. You know masks do nothing. I can remember I went in finally. They made me put on a mask, and I went in one day with a mask. They go, you can take that off. I said, gee, you finally come around to my way of thinking. Yeah, we know it doesn't do anything. That's what my doctor told me. So did they come to that conclusion? Yes, they did. We know now one thing that this grand jury finding found was basically most people that natural immunity, most people picked it up. Some people got natural immunity against variants. Now, I didn't. I got both variants. Now, I can tell you that the second time I got it was very close to nothing. I think I got a cough. And the third time I got it, I got a headache. This is unpleasant. But it really wasn't a big... Remember, they told us it was going to be horrible. It was going to mutate into something worse. And I said, that... I knew I was being gaslighted then, because that never happens. It can be worse when it jumps from one species to another, but as it mutates, it gets less and less and less virulent and less and less potent. Okay, natural immunity lasted for weeks, sometimes 2 years, sometimes longer. We're still studying some people who had long-lasting immunity from natural immunity. Here's from an article I read that kind of started this whole thing. It basically talks about IDI, which is infection-derived immunity. IDI lowered chances of showed that on average, IDI lowered chances of reinfection from ancestral alpha and delta variants. That's the original, the alpha and the delta variant of SARS-CoV-2 in the unvaccinated by roughly 80%. Okay, with such immunity generally starting to decline around 40 weeks, that's the better part of a year, after infection, but leveling off to what appeared to be a roughly stable 50% that lasted from 60 to 80 weeks. Folks, that's about a year and a half after infection. These promising IDI numbers did not appear out of the blue in 2024. They were echoed in numerous studies produced at different times over the course of the last 4 years, the report reads. A 2021 Israeli study cited by the grand jury, for instance, reportedly found that unvaccinated people with IDI had an overall effective protection rate of approximately 86% against the Delta variant. Meanwhile, a 2021 study, remember this is in the midst of it, of patients in New York and California showed that infections per 1,000 unvaccinated persons were roughly 129 for those with no IDI and only 5 among the IDI a 96% relative risk reduction rate. 96%. That's better than the claimed what they claim for the vaccine, the genetic therapy. That turned out to be absolutely false. How many people do you know that took the shot that then turned around and got COVID? Now, I know people who didn't. Nonetheless, a huge number of people. Gaslight, ladies and gentlemen, gaslight. The grand jury noted how none of these statistics should have been a surprise to anyone in healthcare. That's my point. And that such basic science is so well understood that the broad strokes of it could be found in virtually any high school textbook. High school textbook. Jury members further highlighted how people with IDI in 2020 and 2021 had little to nothing to gain from non-pharmaceutical interventions such as masking and lockdowns. Remember, I've already said those did nothing. Two policies, their first interim report, documented had little to no scientific benefit. By the way, you should know that some of the CDC people have come out and said the whole six-foot spacing thing was simply pulled out of a hat. Had no scientific basis whatsoever. They just came up with a number. Back to the article. They also admonished government health agencies for ignoring biological reality and for inconsistent public policy prescriptions. Given that there were testing modalities available that could easily confirm whether a person had IDI, that's an antibody test, this grand jury believes it was irresponsible of government agencies not to have advised tailoring their mitigation measures to divide those at decreased risk due to IDI in the same way they would later divide the vaccinated. Especially those of lower age with fewer comorbidities who were already at reduced risk. The report reads, where officials have concerns about certain behaviors, they should absolutely communicate those concerns and can discourage those behaviors, but not at the expense of suppressing or ignoring, quote-unquote, the science. Folks, we were so badly gaslighted. And we continue to be badly gaslighted. There's more to this article. Government experts attack potential COVID treatments, hydroxychloroquine, with no scientific data to the contrary, attacked it as ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, horse paste, and completely false assurance. Guess what, folks? In places where, for instance, hydroxychloroquine is given as a preventative for dengue fever, which is a nasty thing carried by mosquitoes, South America, Africa, in those places, and also places where ivermectin is used for the same thing, the incidence of COVID was very, very, very low. Not quite non-existent, but very low. These kinds of things go on and on. If you recall, people like Chris Cuomo talking horribly about people who refused to have the vaccine, and remember that little scenario where he went to his basement and hid out and quarantined himself, and he made sure he got all the shots and the boosters. What's he claiming now? He's claiming he's a vaccine injury. Okay, you don't get to have it both ways, Chris. You can't be the Pied Piper leading the children off and then later come back and say, well, I made a mistake. No. I think you listened to the wrong people is what happened. There were both hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin were early treatments. They were not preventatives like the genetic therapy was supposed to be a preventative that didn't work. And, well, there's more to this story, and I'm out of time. So if you're interested, let me know. Contact me. But ladies and gentlemen, open your eyes and stop being gaslighted. I may run more on this. I probably will. But you can contact me. My email address is vicechairman@principledpolicy.com. That's vicechairman@principledpolicy.com. And you know what I think. And now I want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join me again next week for another Principles and Policies.